Last time we were here, we talked about some of the deep foundational things about marriage, the purpose of marriage. We talked about the deep differences between men and women and how important it is to understand those, to be able to give life to each other. But tonight what I want to talk about tonight is a real practical area. We put this in a section of our course we call Building Connection. It's a very practical thing that you can do, husband and wife, but also if you're single. And I know we've got some single people here. This is really designed for you as well. But it's a real practical thing as far as really building connection, particularly between husbands and wives, but just getting control of your life and keeping free from what I'd call the number one disease of the American culture, which is overload. It's an interesting thing. It would have been early, about several years ago when they did the last census, they had an article in the Focus magazine, and Dr. Dobson was looking at the trends in families in the U.S. And of course, just about all of the trends we're down when it comes to family, more single parents, more higher divorce rate, more children born without a pair of parents in the home, and so forth. And he was just commenting on what's going on in our culture. And they did an interview with him, and they asked this question, which I think is important, and that is, if you had to indicate the one factor that has done more damage to families than any other, what would it be? Now think about that. What one factor has done more damage to marriages, to parents with children, than any other? And this is what he said. He said it would be the almost universal condition of fatigue and time pressure, which leaves every member of the family exhausted and harried. Many of them have nothing left to invest in their marriages or in the nurturing of children. 59% of boys and girls come home to empty houses every afternoon, during which time anything can happen. And this hurried lifestyle also puts great pressure on women. Many of them are trapped in a chaotic world that constantly threatens to overwhelm them. Some of these young women grew up in busy, dysfunctional, career-oriented households, and they want something better for their own kids. And yet financial pressures and the expectations of others keep them on a treadmill that renders them unable to cope. And he says this. He said, I've never said this publicly, and I'll share now, and I'm sure I'll be criticized for saying this in this context, but I believe that the two-career family during the child-rearing years creates a level of stress that is tearing people apart. He said it often deprives children of something they will search for the rest of their lives. If a scale back from this lifestyle, which I call routine panic, recognize that, routine panic, ever grows into a movement, it'll portend wonderfully for the family. It should result in fewer divorces and more domestic harmony. Children will regain the status they deserve, and their welfare will be enhanced on 1,000 fronts. We haven't yet begun to approach these goals, but I pray, this is what he said, that a significant segment of the population will awaken someday from the nightmare of overcommitment and say, the way we live is crazy. There's got to be a better way than this to raise our kids, and we'll make whatever sacrifices are necessary to slow the pace of living. In our culture, if you talk with people who work with married couples and work with kids of parents and parents of kids, they'll say, it's interesting, what they'll say is the number one threat to not only our personal sanity, but our marriages, our ability to raise good kids, is the tendency to get overextended, overcommitted, overbusy, to get overloaded. You see that it was interesting, and that's what this is talking about. It's the number one threat. And you can see that. I was reading something from he's a marriage counselor in Atlanta, and he wrote a book called Marriage Dragons. These are the things that eat marriages. And this is how he started out. He said, I hate seeing people miserable and lonely. And in my office, I daily struggle with the heartache of couples whose marriages are deteriorating. And this is especially trouble when intimate companionship is right at their fingertips. It says, this book grew out of my alarm over many marriage problems that are needlessly choking out a happy, supportive friendship. And I realized that couples keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. These recurring intimacy killers are the marriage dragons, the top five most devastating saboteurs of God's gift of intimate companionship. And number one on his list is busyness. No couple is immune to this modern plague. Business crowds out time to be lovers and friends, leaving mates exhausted, separated, and unhappy. And then he writes this story. It's just a brief story. He says, Alex and Jenny sat in my office. They were harassed and exhausted. My heart went out to them as I empathized with the pain and confusion. On the phone, their presenting problem had been a concern over dwindling sexual activity, the fear that they were no longer best friends, and a level of stress in Alex's life that was causing an ulcer. Jenny was worried because sexual intimacy had always been a good indicator of the condition of the rest of their companionship, and they'd not had any activity now for 4 months. Alex looked at me and he said in a pleading and discouraged tone, I hope you can help us. Jenny and I have put off getting counseling because we were too busy. And I hope it's not too late. We realize our counsel will have to work under 3 big handicaps. We don't have enough time, it's the first one, or energy or money. And as I let this sink in, I thought, sadly, they were not an unusual couple, waking up on the run, scurrying from hasty meals to carpools to work to home chores to sleep, and then right back at it again the next day. And then I remembered this was the third night in a row I was going to be working until after 9 p.m. Suddenly, I didn't feel very immune. So busyness tends to get not only them out there, but the best of us. And the more you care about God, the more you care about people, the more vulnerable you are to get overextended. I mean, Christians are the worst when it comes to busyness. And often it begins to show itself in our marriages and with our kids. And we wonder, how is it we can serve God and love God and do all these things for God, and our life falls apart personally and at home and with our own children? And this is the reason we tend to get overextended and busy. Okay, well, that's what we want to talk about here, and that's kind of the importance of it. I just want you to think, I want you to engage with me a little bit. I want you to think about your own family, the one you grew up with, your mom and dad, where you grew up with brothers and sisters. And I want you to think about this. And what about your family? As you think back on where you grew up, did you ever find that busyness within the family was a problem? Did you find that either mom or dad were gone, or when they're home, they're preoccupied or overextended or rushed or on the phone or on the computer? How many of you have seen this? You've felt this in your own family, the one where you grew up? Just wave at me. I want to see. Can you? Okay, so a number of you know what we're talking about here, just the tendency for good people to get overextended. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about the problem, trying to do too much. Overload, basically, is just what happens when my load, that is what I expect of myself and what other people expect of me, exceeds my capacity. In other words, I've got too many places to be and too many things to do, and I'm going too fast and trying to do too much, and I'm stretched too thin. And that's what we're talking about. Let's see what we got. Go on to here. I want to talk a little bit just about the damage of this, and you can kind of see if this is where you are. But when we do get overextended, it affects every area of life. Every area. We'll take a look at it. Physically, this is what happens to people when we get overextended. These are the kinds of things. You can see our heart kind of races. Our stomach and in gut gets tied up. Acid ulcers, colitis, diarrhea. That sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? Muscles, we get headaches, we get neck aches, we get back aches and shoulder aches and all that stuff because everything's tight. Our weight goes up. Sometimes it goes up because we're in pain when we're overextended. We're always afraid we're not going to live up to somebody's expectations. We're always kind of breathing heavy. There's a constant stress and strain. And so to numb the pain, we either eat too much or we eat too little, depending on whether we're using food to numb pain or whether we're using kind of lack of food to give us a sense of control. Rashes and itches, and our immune system goes down, so we catch colds and viruses and that kind of thing a lot easier. And we have trouble sleeping at night and that sort of thing. I mean, this is what happens when people get overly busy. Emotionally, this is what happens. Often we become depressed. We just feel like we don't want to hear the phone ring. We don't want the door to knock. We don't want one more contact from one more person, because any additional responsibility is just excruciating. We just don't want to see people. And we become kind of depressed. We become anxious, frightened, kind of have a constant strain in our insides, kind of a pessimism, a hopelessness, because we're so far behind, we just don't know how we'll get it all done. And become real irritable, impatient, angry. I mean, can't these people see that I'm busy and I'm important? Why can't they leave me alone? Kind of a thing. And my husband becomes an irritation, my wife becomes an irritation, my kids become an irritation. Everybody's an irritation because they all want more from me than I can give. And then at the end, we often give up and just don't care. Mentally, this is what happens. We're just tired. We can't think. We can't create. We just have trouble thinking straight. You can tell we have trouble making decisions because there's so many to make, and I kind of get frozen because there's this backlog of decisions I can't make. I become forgetful, confused, and lose my sense of creativity. Relationally, I become real demanding, kind of short and impatient. I mean, again, I'm a very important, busy person, and frankly, I get very hard to live with, both at home and at the office, because I'm always in a rush, and everything that you might need from me is an interruption and an additional load. So often there's an outburst of anger, a tense of, again, withdrawal, nervous laughing, recklessness. Often, you lose your purse, you lose your wallet, you lose your keys, you lock your keys in the car because you're just in a hurry all the time, and so you're knocking things off and breaking things, and all kinds of stuff happens, banging your car up because you're in a hurry. And this is the time, too, when whatever you're bent in terms of compulsiveness tends to get a hold of you. The more overextended you are, the more vulnerable you are to just giving up and saying, what the heck, I'm going to do things that I know are destructive. So you take more drugs than you need, you drink more than you should, you eat more than you should, you shop more than you should, because there's great pain to being overextended. And for good people, this is the most common form of things we do to ourselves. I mean, we get overextended and then our life gets painful. And then we begin to do things we know are destructive. Professionally, when you go to the office, you go to work, overcommitment will hurt you there. And you can see some of the things that happen. You don't do as good a quality because you're trying to do too much. You're always in a hurry. You get irritated with the people, become bossy because you need people to get out of your way and get the stuff done because you're so busy, and this sort of thing you can kind of see. So it does. It affects every area of life. I want to show you a clip. This is kind of fun. I think you'll enjoy watching this if you've got someplace where you can see a screen. But this is what overcommitment tends to look and feel like in a marriage. Go ahead, Delia, if you'd run that for us, that'd be good. Let's talk a little bit about how do we get into this, and then we'll talk about how we get out of it. But there are two things that pull us into getting overcommit. Do you guys recognize this? I mean, does this happen in your home, in your life, where you get pulled in too many directions? Again, I just want to talk as a guy who watches marriages, and particularly with good people, and we're talking about people like you. That's probably the biggest danger to your own heart and soul and body and your marriage and your relationship with your kids is is just trying to do too many things, too many good things. And as you try to do too many good things, the very most important things often kind of die from neglect. And I'm talking about things like your life with God, your life with your husband, your wife, your life with your kids, your personal health. Some of these kinds of things tend to get burned in the process of trying to do too much. So let's talk about why does this happen? What happens? Well, part of it is what others do to us, just the expectations of other people on us. And then part of it is what we do to ourselves. And we'll take a look at that. If you look at society, I mean, all of us can feel this, kind of the advancing technology, and a lot of this stuff is sold to us with the idea that it'll make life easier and make things less complicated. But what you find out is you begin to get more and more of the things that make life easier and easier is they actually make it busier and busier. Whenever you get a new thing, before you can use that iPod, before you can use that DVD, before you can use the computer, what do you got to do? Got to learn how to do it, right? You got to, and that takes some time. All of these things, actually, if you look at them, particularly the working things, just allow you to work more. Used to be you just worked at the office. Well, now you can take it home, right? You've got a computer, you've got email, that sort of thing. I know when I go in, I go into the office, I turn on my computer screen, and there we got, 16, 20, 30 emails. I mean, I'm already an hour and a half behind when I show up. If I get home, the first thing I do is punch that answering machine, and I've got, four, five, six calls to return before I can actually be home. And so a lot of this stuff, in fact, is allowing us to work longer and more. We're more accessible. It used to be when you get in the car, at least you got the drive home to kind of breathe and catch your breath. Well, what can you do now? Phone calls, right? You can return all the phone calls. It used to be you'd take a ride in an airplane, and at least from takeoff to touchdown, you could kind of kick back, read the magazine, watch the movie, catch a nap or something. But look around. I mean, what can people do now? Get out the laptop, right? You can catch up on all the paperwork. So a lot of this stuff that's supposed to really save us time actually just extends. It just extends time. I mean, think about that. Think of the time that we spend on computers and phones and that kind of thing and the pull of that. Increased opportunities. I mean, I'm just telling you something you guys already know, and that is, if you go overseas, you go into a grocery store, I mean, there's one kind of bread and two kinds of cereal and one peanut butter and grape jelly, and that's about it. You go into Walmart. I don't know. What happens to you when I go into Walmart? My eyes roll back. I mean, I'm just in a catatonic state, of overload. And I may need one thing, and somewhere in that 2 acres is that light bulb. But where you're going to find it, who knows? So it takes you, a long time. And then, anyway. But all this stuff, if you think about it, the increasing options, all of that means choices. It means time. There are guys who get paid six figures on 150 different channels to make sure that you feel you've got to be on their channel all the time. And so anyway, I'm just saying the increased options and websites and all that stuff, actually, if you look at what it does to your mind and your time, I mean, if you just stop and think about it, it just leaves you with a lot less time for some of the things that are most important because you've got to go check those websites and channels and magazines and so forth. This is one of the most interesting, particularly among Christian people, and that is the strive for excellence. And it sounds wonderful, and you can find verses that kind of support it, whatsoever you do all the glory of God and all this business. The trouble is what you find out is you're now required to be okay, you need to be excellent in just about everything. When my kids were growing up, I coached soccer. Now, I didn't know that much about soccer, but it really didn't matter then. All they wanted is a parent, somebody to volunteer. Well, you can't do that now. If you think you're going to coach soccer today, I mean, you've got to be certified. You've got to have gone to clinics. You've got to win for crying out loud. You know, my parents were just glad if I showed up every time and we had drinks at halftime. That was about all that was required. It's collecting the snacks that are okay. But you've got to be an outstanding soccer coach, baseball coach, whatever it is. And you can go down through this. We got books now about being an outstanding husband and wife. And what that does is each of that creates in the other one the expectation that you'll be the person in the book that they just read. You know, if you're at work, you've got to be an outstanding writer, communicator, speaker, manager, visionary. I mean, all the information now makes the expect so that just normal people aren't any good anymore. You've really got to be good at it. Ministry, recreation, so forth. There is kind of an expectation of excellence. I love what Chuck Swindoll said. He said, the only trouble with success is that the formula for achieving it's the same as the formula for a nervous breakdown. In other words, if you look at what's expected of people and you look at a normal human being, we just can't do it. We've either got to pretend that we can and hope people don't see that we can't, or we've got to accept the fact that we can't live up to people's expectations. This is an interesting thing. Some of you women will get a kick out of this. One of the Navigator wives, Jean Fleming, she was caught in the middle of a lot of what you are caught in, and she wrote a book called In Search of Simple, and she said this. She said, surely this Christian life was meant to be simpler than this. In 20-some years that I've been a Christian, I have received instruction on and been challenged to read my Bible daily, pray without ceasing, do in-depth Bible study regularly, memorize Scripture, meditate day and night, fellowship with other believers, always be ready to give an answer to the questioning unbeliever, give to missions and to the poor, work as unto the Lord, use my time judiciously, give thanks in all circumstances, serve the body using my gifts to edify others, keep a clean house as a testimony, practice gracious hospitality, submit to my husband, love and train my wife, discipline, disciple other women, manage finances as a good steward, involve myself in school and community activities, develop and maintain non-Christian friendships, stimulate my mind with careful reading, improve my health through diet and exercise, color coordinate my wardrobe, watch my posture, and, quote, simplify my life by baking my own bread. Now, I don't know if you know it, but that's what you got to do to be okay with God and with his people. And if that's true, you know, you got to either hide the fact you're not doing it or absorb some criticism for not being great. Social thing number four, and that is just that there are four, and I think we all know this, as you become an adult, life gets a lot more complicated. And there are three greedy institutions, and this is not to be mean, but they do tend to be greedy. And that's your family, your job, and your church. And from all three of them, you're going to hear in various forms that this is the most important thing in your life. Because whoever's at home, at work, and at the church, to them, your involvement with them is the most important thing in your life. And what you find is in all three areas, the more you do, and the better the results, the more is expected. And so you do have this sense of pulling. The better husband you are, the greater the expectations of your wife, and the more easy it is for her to be disappointed because you can't be there when she needs you. The better you are at work, the higher people talk about you, the more rave they are in their reviews, and the more they want you around and the more responsibility they want to give you. And the more sensitive and gifted you are at church, again, the higher the expectations and the more people expect. So the better you do, the more is expected until, you know, you either have to leave because you're burned out or you have a mental breakdown, one or the other. So there is a tendency that the better you do, the more conscientious you are, the more gets expected of you. And the more you find yourself disappointing people or running faster. Now, that's what society does. That's what other people do. And that's how good people get running too fast. It's just a sense that in order to keep up with what's expected, I have to run faster than I really can. But there are two things we do, I think, to ourselves. I want to ask you a question. And that is, why are conscientious Christians, people who love God and love his people, what is it about us that would make us most susceptible to just getting overcommitted and overextended? I mean, what's the thinking behind that? What are the lines of thinking that cause us to say yes to way more than we probably should? I mean, just think about that. What is it? Talk to me here. Okay, supernatural power. Now, talk about that. What do you mean by that, Grant?
Give me what I need to make.
Yeah, I can always do it because I know God will.
I can rely on him.
So the tendency is think, if somebody's asking, it must mean I should do it. And if I say yes, God will come in and hold me up. Okay? What else? What else kind of pushes you to say yes beyond what's sensible? Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
So then,
okay, if you do happen to get healthy, people gravitate towards you, and pretty soon they'll make you unhealthy, right? Yeah, okay, good. What else? Somebody else was waving down here, yeah.
Don't want to bury my talents.
Okay, the idea, there is that sense of, you know, life is short, and I've got to do whatever I'm going to do now, and I'm responsible for my talents, and so that is that fear, right? Fear, kind of a fear of being unfaithful. Good. What else? I mean, think about your own life. What caused you to say yeah to too much stuff?
Well, you want to be able to help every single person.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a compassionate heart, you see a person in real need, and you really do want to help, don't you? Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. The greater our compassion, the greater the tendency to say yes to more people than I can. And pretty soon I've said yes to so many that I really can't take care of any of them very well, right? Anything else? What else kind of pushes you? Think of your own life. Yeah.
I think it's kind of what you're saying. It's love of God, love of his people. And
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Okay, I mean, don't these sound familiar thoughts? You hear these thoughts play in your mind, life is short, I'd rather burn out than rust out, and, you know, this kind of thing. And sure enough, you know, the idea is to not to do either one. Neither one is particularly good if you've seen the end result of it. Okay, good. Anything else that you find in your own life that kind of pushes you beyond what's healthy? Okay. Good. Yeah, there is a joy and a fulfillment. And that's a positive thing. In other words, until you begin to say yes, and then the exhaustion kind of undermines it. Okay, I think you guys get the idea on that. But that is true. There is a zeal without wisdom burns out the best the fastest. In other words, the more zealous we are without understanding limits and the direction of God takes the best people and will burn us out the quickest. Now, there's another thing, and I think this is harder to talk about, but it also gets to the root of it, and that is there's something we do to ourselves here. I want to see if I can say this without being, I don't want to be critical, but I know in my own life what happens is you taste something. In other words, when you do things that other people want you to do, there are some rewards to this. There's some good things that happen. People say wonderful things about you. I don't know if you're in school or you're at the office or you're in ministry. People start saying, this person's a wonderful person. They just help so many people. And you get this taste of approval and honor, and people think you're a magnificent person. It happens at the office. It happens in a church. It happens in a sorority or fraternity or whatever. And you get a taste of that sense of wonder and awe that people have toward you because you're such a giving person, and it can become addictive. Often we see this with our students' popularity. There's just that desire for everybody, and this gets to the root of it, for everybody to love me and to think highly of me and speak highly of me, and I get a little taste of that, and it's like I can't stop because I'm afraid if I stop, somebody won't think positively of me. Reputation. Again, you get this reputation of being this do-all person, And that can become addictive because you get this sense, you know, everybody thinks I'm wonderful, and if I keep going real fast, you'll get that. Particularly when you get into businesses and that sort of thing, you realize that the guy who's always at the office, the first one there and the last one to leave, they're the ones who get promoted. And so just the desire to get power and control, this is the guys who get money becomes a real factor. I think when you get to the root of most American busyness, frankly, it is, when you get right to it, it's just affluence and greed. I mean, why do we work two jobs? Why does my wife have to work? Well, because we want a very nice house and a nice neighborhood and two new cars, and we want to go to Hawaii for our vacation, and I want to shop at, you know, Neiman Marcus and Banana Republic and Talbot's or wherever it is I like to shop. And so, you know, when you get to the root of what is causing American people to go so hard that they're too tired for God, for marriage, and for their kids, very often the root of it is, I really am not willing to live at a standard of living that would allow me to have a decent pace of life. So money becomes a hard-driving thing. And anyway, those are some of the things. And I think if we get to the root of why is it that I work so hard, why is it that I, you know, do so much, why is it that I say yes often, and why is it that I'm so exhausted, it's often something I've tasted that I'm addicted to, and in order to feed that addiction, I've got to go faster than's healthy. I mean, that's what it gets down to. Now, it does, this is overload, and it does threaten to kind of overrun us all and ruin us all. And I just say, even as a spiritual community, you know, if, often when we start talking about things that we know really matter to us, like staying connected to God, having a close companion in the faith, time for friendship, time for worship. You know, one of the things that causes our hearts for God to dull is we just don't have time to stop and remember what he's done. We don't have time to stop and look at the creation and be amazed. You know, the guys who used to be shepherds in the field and used to plow and used to fish and that sort of thing, I mean, they had time. I mean, they'd be rowing in and they'd watch the sunset, or they'd be coming in late and they'd watch the Milky Way, and or they'd be up early and they'd be watching the sun rise, or they'd see a flower, they'd see a cloud, and they'd realize the amazing person that's behind all this. Or they'd have time to stop and play with their kids and just realize the wonderful privilege of being able to create life that looks like us. And to hold this little kid and to realize this is a gift of an amazing person who loves me very much. Now, if you're frantically busy, you don't have time for that. I mean, you never see the sunset or the sunrise or the stars at night or a flower. You don't get to, you know, enjoy the kids you got enough to realize that these are amazing gifts. I'm just saying, can you feel busyness kind of squeezes out a sense of awe and wonder for God? It squeezes out a sense of his nearness and his presence, and so we become frightened, and therefore we have to go faster. We don't have time to read and listen and be disciples because we're too busy. We don't have time for a companion in life and you know, life with God. You know, we don't have time for a close friend who can ask you, how you doing, and are you getting on top of that besetting sin and that crippling addiction, or, you know, we don't have time for that because we're too busy. So it does threaten to overrun us, and it has tremendous spiritual implications. Now, what about you? I want you to think a little bit. You've got something to write with. I want you to think about the last year. Since this time, you know, since January. Think about January through the year, through the summer, through the fall. And here's what I want you to ask yourself. Have you experienced overload? I mean, have you experienced any of those physical, emotional, relational kind of symptoms of being overextended and going so hard that the things that feed you life and matter most you haven't had time for? So that's a yes or no thing. Now, if the answer is yes, what are your symptoms? What happens to you? So I just think about the last year. I mean, engage with me here. What happens to you when you get overloaded? Physically, emotionally, relationally, spiritually. Just think and write just a minute. It'll be different for everybody here, but what are the symptoms? I want you to engage and write here, because I'm going to ask you to talk to each other here in a minute, so think with me. What happens to you? What happens physically? What happens emotionally, inside? What happens relationally with people? What happens spiritually? What happens morally in your life? What are your symptoms? Now, here's a harder question. What are the causes? Why do you get overextended? What are the causes? What is it in you that makes you say yes to more stuff? Now think about that. You can do. Got that? All right. With that, let's take a break, shall we? Let's take about a 10-minute break. Get a restroom, stretch a little.